Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, everybody, whenever it is that you get your podcast fix. My name is Derek Smith, and this is the Truth or Derek Show, or the Truth or Derek Podcast. The Truth or Derek sitting around talking crime, talking fun. A bunch of stuff coming up today. Heavy show, because you guys know Cheryl McCollum, the great Cheryl Mac McCollum, and Lisa Rybakov are coming by today. Very excited about that. We also got a ton of feedback from last week when we had Josh Franz and Danielle Vasanova on. And you guys, yeah, loved it. You said fit together like a glove. So they're actually going to come back in a few weeks. So we got a little bit of reshuffling, a little bit of rescheduling to do. So you know what? There's, you know, never a dull moment on the Truth or Derek podcast. And you want to know who never has a dull moment? www.podstars.net. Yes, I know. I'm so good at that. Get ready to take your podcasting career to the next level with www.podstars.net. Podstars is a talented and passionate community that will give you the opportunity to interview top professionals from a variety of industries where they will share their insights and experiences with your audience. Plus, everybody will have access to the exclusive celebrity catalog featuring some of the best in the business, both new and established. It's also free to join. As a member of Podstars, you can choose from the catalog of celebrities to interview on your podcast, and if interested, for an additional monthly fee of only $8.99 a month, you can upgrade to the Community Plan, a different and exciting catalog full of some of the best experts and then professionals in their fields today, as well as access to everybody in the whole Podstars universe. It is a great way to invest in your podcast, as you will save time and money by being able to book guests from one platform with an expansive catalog that is constantly being added to, including Josh, Franz, Danielle, Cheryl, Mac McCollum, Lisa Rybakov, and so many more. You know, we're taking full advantage of the old www.podstars catalog, so why wait? Join us. Join us now and start exploring all they have to offer. You will not want to miss out on this amazing opportunity to elevate your podcasting career and be a part of the exciting community. And an exciting community it is. So yeah, come on down, join us. I mean, we're having a blast talking with all of our guests from over there. We're also having a blast with a lot of our new listeners lately. Especially after we talked to Joseph Scott Morgan. We got a whole bunch of new listeners in Florida, all over the country. You know, Josh is Georgia, Franz is in Louisiana, so that obviously bumps up the local thing. We have Matthew Mangino next week. Last time we had him, we had big bumps in Pennsylvania and stuff. So I'm always curious to hear about everybody around the country. You guys know you can reach out to me on Twitter at Derek Vampire Slayer. Email me, podstars with a Z, podstars.connect@outlook.com. We got a bunch of stuff there. Just Google the Truth or Derek Show. A bunch of stuff comes up there. There's always ways to get a hold of me. Again, very easy to get a hold of. Good, bad, otherwise, you know, let me have it. I got a great one here with Jennifer in, where was it? Jennifer in Kentucky. She listens. We talked a few weeks ago about some of the world records that Joey Chestnut has. So a lot of people know him as the Nathan's hot dog eating guy. You know, as I don't have it in front of me, but I think it was around 75 hot dogs in 8 minutes. But he also had like Philly cheesesteaks, 150 hard boiled eggs in 8 minutes, and a bunch of other stuff. So she sent in. She said, "Yay, hi Derek, I love the show. Love Josh, Franz, everybody else, Joseph Scott. You guys are all great. You were talking about world records the other day." She goes, "Have you heard about the guy? I think he's in Nigeria that tried to break the record for, it tried to set a record. I don't know if he was setting or breaking it, for crying for a week straight." So again, you know, we love some audio, and she of course sent over some audio. So let's listen quickly to, and you guys, I'm telling you right now, I went down a rabbit hole when I was looking at this. You have to Google guy trying to set a crying contest, because like he eats and he talks and he like tries to sleep through some of it and stuff like that. He's got the timer going next to him. So I only pulled a little bit. So here goes. Sorry, I got his name. Hold on. I'm telling you. As great as the audio is, you guys have to go look at a video game. Just Google Guinness World... Google Guinness World Record Cryathon. And this guy, I guess, he had... But if you see all the different parts, like, he tries to eat through it, and he tries to, like, function through it. You know, it's amazing if some people go so far out to set these records, because I know that particular guy. Hold on, I got to get his name. Hold on. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know his name. None of the articles have his name in it. Apparently, Guinness shut him down for particular record, so it was a huge waste of time. But, like, he was suffering from, like, dehydration. I guess he said he went temporarily blind for a bit, because I guess he just used his eyes too much. But you know what I said? As always, I already gave you the contact information. You ever have weird video, but especially with audio, because, you know, we love the whole... The podcasting thing is almost 100% audio. Anything good, send it over. Any thoughts, any questions? The last couple of weeks has been trending. For some reason, people are writing in with some serious questions. So I got this one here. This one came from Mike in, where is it? Mike in Seattle. Yeah, he asked, have your dreams changed over time? Again, I don't know why. But you know what? I told you guys, you're right in with anything. I'll talk about it. Obviously, yeah. When you're younger, you always think you're going to be rich and brilliant and a firefighter or a superhero by the age of 25. Of course, thinking about that when you're like 15 or 16. But yeah, obviously that didn't work out for me because I'm still here, not flying around in the sky, saving people. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, they always say, you know, like, you're an adult when you're 18. You can get a gun. You can drink when you're 21 and this, that, and the other thing. I think we've talked about it before. I personally think you're not really an adult here. You're about 26 or 27. I know I look at some of the stuff I did before I met my wife. But even then, you know, that would be going back with 17 years. I see some of the stuff pop up on Facebook. It's like, you wrote this 17 years ago. And I was like, oh, my God, I kind of sucked back then. This is a bit of a douche. But, yeah, you know, your hopes and dreams and who you are and all that changes, I would say, day to day up until you're well into your 30s and you kind of get a grasp on what your life is going to look like and what you're capable of and what you can get accomplished and what you can't. I mean, it sucks. I mean, reality is like that. Everybody wants to live in a 5,000 square foot house with a couple of $500,000 cars and, you know, have $5 million in the bank. And that's all fine and dandy when you're in your teens and in your early 20s and, you know, sometimes you meet people that are in their late 40s and early 50s that are still trying to get the band off the ground. And sometimes you just want to grab them and shake them and say, listen, it kind of sucks, but you got to get to work, son. You got to go make some money. So thank you for the question. Yes, the hopes and dreams change until reality lays the smack down on you. So, you know, make good decisions when you're in your early 20s. Figure out a way to make some money and fall in love, get some good group of friends and all that sort of thing. And no matter what happens, whether it's what you planned or not, it'll turn out for the best. That's the key for me. Good friends, a good relationship, and money. All these people that will line up and tell you that money doesn't buy happiness, they're full of shit. Because it might not buy happiness, but believe me, it certainly you can rent it for the rest of your life. I love this one here. I know we tweeted about it a little while ago. I don't have who sent it to me. It was along the lines, I know we talked about it a little while ago, with the Battleship board game, where again, you can Google it now, the old Battleship board game cover had like a father and a son playing it, and it says fun for the whole family. So it shows a father and a son playing it at the dinner table. And in the background, you can see the mother and the daughter doing dishes. So So we were talking about that a while ago, and then somebody just, again, I'm sorry I don't have the name. They said, do you remember the game Dream Phone? And I didn't. And they sent me, they sent me a TikTok. I vaguely remember the commercials for it, but it was like for like teens and preteens. And I guess you'd go around this board and you'd hit the button and it would be like, Gary has a crush on you. But like the Gary character, even if you look at the pictures and if you listen to the audio of the thing, like it sounds like the guy's in like his late 20s, early 30s. Is like, oh, hi, Lisa. Yeah, I saw you around school and I was wondering if you wanted to date. And it's funny, too, because I think that game came out in the 90s. It wasn't even an 80s thing because, again, if you look at some of the shit that went on in the 80s, it was the Wild West. But if you guys want to hoot, especially people that are sadly in their 40s like I am, go have a look at some of the YouTube or the TikTok videos where they talk about Dream Phone, because you probably have a sweet memory of playing that when you're young. But when you look at it now, it's super creepy. And that is super creepy on the Truth or the super creepy segment on the Truth or Derek show. I had one other thing. There was two other things. I want to get to one of them because, as usual, I'm running on long and I can't wait to talk. You guys are going to love this. Lisa Rybakov and Cheryl McCollum make the ultimate duo because you get that hardcore New York brass meets that sweet Southern brilliance, and it just comes out like nothing you've ever seen. So one last thing. There was a, send me all this stuff. We're always fascinated. Mary in Florida. Well, we got a lot of stuff in Florida and New Jersey. So shout out to both of my South and East Coast people. Again, I always appreciate the input. They sent me a story. And we've talked about this a few times before, but this was the first time I came across this one. There was a guy. So apparently... I'll give you the Coles notes because the story is crazy. But there was a guy who went fishing. He was an Australian dude. And when he went to grab his boat at the marina, there was a stray dog. So he grabbed the stray dog, just, you know, go out fishing for the day, grab a dog. Why not? You know, I have a dog. I shoot the shit with my dog all the time. So they head out. And the, mechanical failure, all this. He doesn't have a radio set up and all that. He goes adrift for 3 months, something like 97 days. Sorry, I don't have the guy's name here, but, 3 months later, some plane, for whatever reason, ends up spotting him. And actually a really cool move. They throw a whole bunch of supplies and stuff out for him. They go back, they radio some local fishing boat that was in the neighborhood, and the guy ended up picking them up. But the guy survived at sea for 3 months. And I guess the thing that I thought was kind of strange was he gave the dog to the captain of the boat that picked him up, which I guess is kind of sweet because that was kind of like your savior. But like when you first start reading these stories, you always think it's like, oh, he's going to eat the dog. But no, apparently he had some sort of water system. I don't know if he was collecting rain or if he had a bunch of water with him. And he had a whole bunch of fishing gear. So they were just, you know, eating fish. And when they interviewed him, because it was like, we've talked about this before with stuff that I think I can do. And it's like, okay, you want to leave me alone on a boat for 90 days? I'll be fine. I'll just keep myself busy. But especially, you know, there's obviously no internet out there. And you'd be super happy to have a dog with you. And they were just like, yeah. You know, it was a lot of like survival stuff and trying to stay out of the sun. And their happiest points when they just go in and they'd swim around together. And I just thought, like, what a sweet story, but horrifyingly sweet story. Obviously better because, again, you got to be trepidatious when you read stuff from the internet because you're obviously expecting that eventually he had to eat the dog. But no, they got rescued. He gave the dog to the captain that saved him. And then afterwards, again, the guy's not stressed out, nothing. He's like, yeah, you know, he's still going to go back to fish and he's still going to do his thing. So, if you want to read a crazy story, pull up the old World Wide Web and check out Australian Guy 90 Days with a Stray Dog. Touching story of survival. Again, we've talked about it before where I'm like, yeah, I could do that. I could picture myself on like day two or three, like Tom Hanks in Castaway trying to figure out a way to hang myself on the boat. Or the sad realization that I'm eventually going to have to eat the dog. Anyways, as always, I wanted to thank all you guys for everything you sent in. I got, as always, so much more stuff to get to. We will have to pop in another solo episode at some point just to go through the questions and comments and videos. But again, always send all that stuff over. I love it. You love it. And I tell you right, you're going to love this right now. Big love fest on the Truth of Derek podcast now, because we got Lisa Rybakov and we have Cheryl MacCollum, and we got it right now. Let's go. Well, a better true crime duo you will not find. Our first guest, and you know I'm telling the truth because she is a licensed private investigator and polygraph examiner. She's been featured in Cosmo, Vanity Fair, Good Day New York. She's all over Court TV, News Nation, Dr. Oz, Rachel Ray, and a million other places. She knows if you've been lying. She knows if you've been good or bad. She is the great Lisa Rybakov. Joined by an absolute Truth or Derek podcast favorite. She's not locking up bad guys with Nancy Grace or making us laugh with the classic line, "He is the laziest serial killer in history." She hosts what is arguably the best true crime podcast out there, Zone 7, an Emmy award-winning CSI National Law Enforcement Hall of Fame inductee. She kicks ass. She names. She kicks ass. She takes names. She is the amazing Cheryl Mac McCollum. How you guys doing tonight? Hey.
Honey, I feel like I'm at a party. Absolutely.
That's exactly what this is. It's hanging out with friends, having a good old conversation about true crime. Can't be better than that.
Well, that's why it's one of those weird areas, because it comes out next week. But when you record something at night, it does have a different feel to it, because it feels like less like you're at work. I know the last time Cheryl and I talked, it was like 10 o'clock in the morning where you kind of have to be serious, where now we can just kind of hang out.
Absolutely. It is different. It's like going to a movie that's a matinee versus at night. If you walk out and the sun is shining, it's a buzzkill.
Yeah, it is a bit of a buzzkill. Yeah. So you guys, we got a million things to talk about, but the one thing we were just talking about before we started was you guys are hosting or just attending the Hamptons Whodunit next weekend. Now, I always think of it, I don't know if you guys saw that movie, The Glass Onion, but if a writer or somebody was putting together, you know, a murder mystery weekend, and then two great investigators show up. Like, you guys walk in the door at like 5 o'clock on a Friday, and by like 5:02, you're like, yeah, John did it. This is over. Is that what it is? Or is it's more of like a wine and crime event?
Yeah, I think we're bringing the whodunit. I know I'm bringing a case. I know several other people are showcasing either books and cases they followed. I know Lisa's going to do a special demonstration as far as being a polygrapher. So we're just coming to showcase what it is we do. In a beautiful place in this country.
Now, I was gonna ask the obvious first question, with speaking of lie detectors, is can a regular person beat a lie detector?
No. And my favorite thing in the world is when people try and come in and try and beat the polygraph test, because A, I can use my skill set and call them out on it, and B, the best part is calling them out on it, and then questioning and figuring out why are you doing it. What makes you think you can get away with it? And better yet, where did you find your horrible research? Because I like having an idea of where these people are going and what they're reading to have an understanding for me of what future examinees could possibly be having access to at that point. And then I also tell them, I said, listen, here's the deal. You wouldn't try and beat a polygraph test if you knew you were going to pass. And I constantly hear when people fail, oh, it didn't work. The test is BS and everything else. And my only rebuttal to them is, well, if you passed the test, you wouldn't be saying that, because then there would be no issue with the exam.
Yeah, the person who wins doesn't complain about winning. The person who loses, this whole thing is rigged.
Oh, yeah. It's rigged. DQ. There's something wrong. I don't like her. She doesn't like me. No, dude, you just didn't tell the truth.
See, I've always thought the trick to beating a lie detector test is just answer the question like you're positive of the answer. Like, you ask me right now, you say, Derek, did you invent the iPhone? Yes, I did. I know. I remember the day I did it.
Well, I might refer to you as shrink afterward, but your physiological tracings will show me that you're not telling the truth other than an abundance of information on the internet.
So is that a skill like that you have to hone? Like the computer, I'm assuming, doesn't print out something that says lie, truth. Like, because I know everyone sees everything in movies. Cheryl and I have talked about this before where like, You watch the CSI television show, they have 100% clearance rate. Where we know in real life, walking a crime scene and all that sort of thing is very, very different. But I just want to stick to the lie detector thing for a bit. Like, do you have to do 100 or 200 or 300 of these before you kind of like get a skill to it?
We go to polygraph school, which is a basic training course for an extended period of time, to which afterwards we do an internship and then apply for graduation. That's the procedure. Once you graduate, you're kind of hitting the ground running from that point forward. I was blessed to be in a situation when I graduated, my father served as my mentor, and we became co-examiners with our family company that we had. So I did have an opportunity to bounce ideas off of him and kind of trial and error and see what works. But it is one of those situations is you learn as you go along the way, and you learn as long as you network, but it's also up to the examiner to ask questions. But we do have our training, there are alumni networks, and there are plenty of resources out there to help us once we're in the field. It's just whether or not the examiner takes them up on the offer.
See, what's got to be frustrating for the both of you is how important your job is. Again, we talk to people all the time where it's like, like we were talking about going live versus when you're recording something. Like, if you get asked to do a polygraph for somebody who, we talk about murderers all the time, somebody that's maybe on the fence, or Cheryl has to go to, walk a crime scene and all this sort of thing, is you have to be at 100% all the time. So do you have, is there a secret in the world of true crime when you're actually, your feet are on the ground and you're doing the work where you just have to block out the regular life or turn your phone off or whatever and actually just focus on what you're doing? Is there magic to that?
Well, that's actually something that Cheryl and I experienced together. We went out to the crime scene at the University of Georgia, and you're talking about being boots on the ground and turning everything off. When Cheryl and I were out there, we did a canvas at the university to kind of get a lay of the land as to what exactly was the five senses. What do you see? What do you hear? What do you smell? What can you go ahead and interpret from, even though it was after the crime scene, but what can we go ahead and put together and put the pieces of the puzzle? I didn't tell Cheryl this until probably, I think, Cheryl, was it like a day or two after,
It
maybe even,
was.
yeah, I didn't say anything to her because I didn't want my experience, though. Let me just clarify. I had never worked a crime scene, period. I've never walked a crime scene. But to have the opportunity to walk a crime scene with Mac, you want to talk about winning the true crime lottery? Like, that is off my bucket list. Like, I no longer feel like I have to pay millions of dollars into a raffle if this ever happens, despite it going towards like an excellent charity, because Mac aligns herself with charities fantastically. But to have that full eight, I think it was like 8 to 10 hours we were together, and to hear and see and interpret, it was, yeah. It was Christmas
Well,
for me.
let me jump in before you tell them the
Yeah.
ending that you're headed toward. Here's one thing that is a staple for me. I rarely work an entire event alone. I normally have some of the best in the country with me. Now, I will say to them, especially at my own department, I want to go in first. And I don't want you to tell me what you've already surmised. Let me get there. And then if we're saying the same thing, we're off and running. If we see two separate things, we need to go back in together and walk that thing and figure this out. Okay. So I am always working with a net, so to speak. When Lisa and I got there on Lakeland's case, I had the benefit of having somebody that ask the hard questions for a living. So instinctively, even though she says, I've never worked a crime scene and I had Mac and all that, she didn't really have me. She was working independent and I was working independent. We were just together. But you could tell the way she was walking and the places that she went, she was forward thinking, what would be the questions I would ask this person if I got them on the box? You could tell. And it was a beautiful thing. There was one point she just broke off and went down this embankment and was standing at the water's edge and she was gazing off. It looked to me like she was either being super sympathetic or some memory was coming over her. Something was going on. It touched me so much watching her. I took a picture of it and then I sent it to her later. And that's when she shared this with me. So again, having her and then having her tell me of her experience, it was a money tree. So I will let her finish.
Yeah, I'm like tearing up even like I'm have I don't want to say flashbacks, but I'm putting myself back in that scene as Cheryl, you could read me the phone book. Like just the way that you communicate. I'm like, so going back to what you were saying about like turning it off and being able to just be present in the moment. I've learned through polygraphs and through interviews and interrogation that originally in the beginning when I first got into my career, I was in my early 20s and I was dating. Worst thing you could possibly do is be in my job in my early 20s trying to date. Like, no man.
What do you guys talk about at dinner?
Oh, it was great. It was great quality. I mean, I had friends, you got to write a book about your dating life and your career because this is, it will sell. But I learned that like there was a light switch that I had to turn off. But the only time that I've really had that opportunity to like be able to mesh the two was being at the scene with Cheryl. And she had taken that photo and she sent it to me. And then I gave her a call and I was just like, oh my God. I said, first off, thank you for taking that photo. Second of all, I just want to be transparent with you with what was going through my mind while there. And that's when I opened up to her because previously we were talking about the similarities and parallels between this case and the Chandra Levy case. And that's when I said to her, well, there's also a third part of that triangle. And that triangle has to do with my friend Karina's case that was based in New York, where she was actually running on a trail in her house in Howard, over by Howard Beach on Long, in Queens. And she was ambushed and she was actually sexually assaulted and murdered. And so for me to be at that crime scene and see the parallels between this case and what I knew of my friend's case, it kind of just hit home. And it did bring a sympathetic point to it because it did hit home. And at that point, as investigators, when we have cases that we show up to crime scenes or we have to deal with narratives or read a witness statement or interview a witness in person, you can't always turn that light switch off. And we then have to juggle in that scenario of how can I support the individual that I'm currently interviewing while also minding my own emotions and not letting my emotions show. So that then stems into almost like the trauma that we go through as experts, because not only do we have to deal with that call, once that call is over, we have to go to somewhere else. We don't have time to process that call. We don't have time to have a communication or speak to someone about it. So after a while, you're dealing in polygraph terms, we like to call it examiner trauma, where it's case after case after case. And Cheryl, you know from law enforcement, there's just repetitiveness. And that's why it even gets to the point where we have some people that just can't cope with their emotions, and then it just leads to negative situations. It's just yeah, that's the easiest way I can surmise all of it.
No, it's interesting because believe me, I'm sympathetic because you see, like, again, we've talked to Cheryl before.
Yeah.
We used to think about it like, would you guys get tunnel vision? Like, say, we'll talk about it in a bit, but you know, if there's, you know, a serial killer or, you know, like you said, working a similar cases where a child is kidnapped, raped, and murdered, and you see two, and then you see three, you see, the issue is obviously you guys are at the top of your game. You're going to get the harder cases or the more famous cases or the cases involving money and this sort of thing. So again, is there like looking at something with fresh eyes, getting out of tunnel vision? Because if I think most people, if you started to see the same thing or a pattern emerging, it would be hard to move outside of that. So is there like, again, you guys talk about when you walk the scene together for the first time with fresh eyes and you don't talk to anybody, how do you like give your own fresh eyes rather than just going in there and everyone says, oh, the husband did it. Oh, the neighbor did it.
Well, here's the deal. For me, if I don't know anything and I get to the University of Georgia and we are able to locate the tennis courts and we're able to locate where the band practiced, all right, this is where she was. What am I seeing? What is around me? I'm going to soak it all in. How many people are around even now post-murder? So you've got some people that went home scared. You got some people that don't want to leave their dorm. But if you've still got people at that lake, what are they doing? Are they jogging? We saw folks walking, hiking, kayaking. playing tennis, fishing. There was still a ton of activity there just a day after. So for me, if I can find it, then anybody could find it, right? I'm not in class there. I'm not in the dorms. I haven't been on that side of the campus, I don't think, ever for any reason. Then once we got boots on the ground, things started not to make sense. So we thought from some of the news media and where people put the flowers is where it happened. So that's where we started. But we knew very quickly, no way this is where it happened. It doesn't make sense for a killer. It doesn't make sense for a sexual assault. It doesn't make sense for an ambush. It's too wide open here. So we started to walk what we thought would be the obvious trail. And even at that point, we're like, he's got to come from somewhere. Where did he come from? And then we started to do our thing. And we left and we went back around. And then we drove around. And then Lisa says, you know what? Pull in that gas station because I'm thirsty and let me go talk to somebody. Well, you know, honey, when she walks in there with that New York swagger, you know, she goes right up to the woman
She's a
and
New
just starts.
Yorker. She walked right up to the woman and goes, "Hey, I need a fucking six pack of Busch Light or Marlboro Reds.
Yeah,
Not
and
right
I need to
now. I want
know,
it right fucking now."
and I need to know everything you know about Lakeland. I know you know something. Don't even try to tell me you don't. And I'm in the car going, she's gonna call the police, you know. But then Lisa comes out and she goes, she knows everything. Come in with me. So then I go in and, you know, I talk to her the way I would talk to her. And she did have a lot of information. It was solid information. It was good information. So then we looked right across the street. That's the apartment. And as the crow flies, now this is completely different. It changes everything. Forget the University of Georgia. Start here at the apartment. We went as the crow flies out a back gate. The back gate leads you to a path, leads you over some railroad tracks, leads you right downtown, on this little path. This the upper little pond area, almost like a waterway, a dam, if you will. So that was the pond, not the lake down below. She was up top. So again, as the crow flies, you say, he's right here. He came right through here. So where did he possibly put his bloody clothes? In the first dumpster he got to. And then
Unbelievable.
he walked straight to the next dumpster or trash can and so on and so forth. And Lisa, she talked to folks, you know, washing their car. So she can say she's never worked one, but she worked it like a boss.
I treated it as if I was conducting my own area canvas as a private investigator from my years of experience. And I think my favorite thing about that whole gas station interaction was I was pumping gas and I'd look at Cheryl and I go, watch what I can do. It was like one of those Stewart from Mad TVs of look at me. And she's like, what are you?
Look at
And there
you.
was like genuine fear in her eyes. And she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'll be back. She's like, no, really. But for me, like I was trained when you're going ahead and you're doing an investigation, just go pop in, see who's there, what's going on. And I wanted to know who was working behind the counter because I just wanted to kind of gauge a profile of is this person going to be talkative? So that's why I interacted with the attendant just to kind of gauge how friendly she was. And then I went back out to Cheryl and I go, okay, you're going to go in and have a conversation now. And she goes, why me? And I go, because I'm not from around here.
That's the old saying is, how can you tell if somebody's from New York? Because the first fucking thing they say is, I'm from New York.
Exactly.
There you go. And let me clarify, the fear in my eye was not for Lisa. It was for the attendant.
Yeah, somebody else is going to have to come walk that crime scene to figure out why Lisa killed somebody at
Yes.
a gas
This
station.
woman has just had a heart attack because she's being interrogated, not questioned.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. It
You
was
know, I
great.
think, yeah, Cheryl, you and I talked about this a little before. I'd be curious if Lisa, what her take on it is. You guys are talking about obviously you're world-class investigators, all this, and that's why you're at the top of your game. Do you guys have like a Monday morning quarterback sort of situation where you look up on another case and just, I don't want to say sloppy work, but again, with all the news that's coming in and all this stuff, and we'll talk about some of it shortly, like obviously spread too thin. You guys would be if you had to cover every case, but do you look at some and just think, fuck, I just wish I could talk to that detective and ask him this or ask him that? Because you
Honey,
do.
I make phone calls.
Yeah.
Yes. If I think I can help, if there's somebody I know, this just happened recently. There was a case, and I was listening to this detective talk, and I knew from the way he was talking, he had never heard of Francine Bardol, but he needed to. He believed spent shell casings could not result in DNA. And that's not true. So he needed Francine. So I picked up the phone and left him a message. And I'm like, hey, if I can help, great. If you don't think it's worth nothing, that's great. But I'm cheering for you. But I'm telling you, this woman will change the way you're going to operate this case. She can. And if nothing else, I just want you to know you can get DNA from a spent shell case.
We actually, because we get a bunch of questions and all that. They're usually about food. It doesn't like we always joke, like if we had Obama on here, people would just ask them about, well, what kind of hot dog do you eat? And well, one of the questions, it was a two-part question. They were both from Florida. So we had Joseph Scott Morgan on, and we got a whole bunch of people from Florida.
Sure.
And I don't want to say asking Florida questions, but one of them was, what is, you guys work on the road a lot. What are your two favorite fast food restaurants?
Lisa, go ahead.
Is Starbucks considered fast food? Because I just think that's breakfast, lunch, and dinner in all one. Like, that's it.
No, that is not fast food.
But there's a drive-through.
That's true.
So technically, okay. Plus
Wait,
or
I went to a liquor store in Pittsburgh that had a drive-through. That was not a restaurant.
okay, well, because technically Starbucks serves food. Okay, fine. Plus or minus Starbucks, if we let it go. If we don't let it go. Favorite fast food? I'm not really too much of a fast food person, but if I had to choose, Chick-fil-A is number one. And number two would be stopping at Wendy's for their chicken nuggets, but going to McDonald's for their French fries.
Good answer, Cheryl.
Chick-fil-A, no question.
Jesus, you guys can play.
Two
Oddly
reasons.
enough, Franz Borghardt, also his favorite place was Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. But my police department, that is where the Dwarf House, aka Chick-fil-A, was started. So I'm going to be loyal to the home team.
Right on.
And then I have to agree that it's a McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and French fries.
Excellent. Now, sorry, I had to get that out of the way because the same person, and it just reminded me when you were talking about DNA, was wondering, can you get DNA out of urine?
Yes.
Yeah, I
You
guess I guess they didn't
can
say
get
that.
DNA out of any bodily fluid,
They just
sweat.
said that there was a case, and they weren't sure if when they tested the urine if you could get DNA out of it. And I thought probably, but it's not
Yeah.
blood.
It's in your sweat. It's in your saliva. Yes. When you do the ancestry.com, you're swabbing spit,
Yeah.
any bodily fluid.
Yeah, they definitely need to fine-tune that system. I think I posted it about 2 weeks ago. There was something in the news where people do animal DNA,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
a woman sent in her swab. They said it was a dog, and then it came back that she was like a 40% Alaskan Malamute.
Her husband wishes she wouldn't talk 40% of the
Oh my God.
Now, speaking of walking crime scenes, and I was gonna bring this up another time, but you actually, since the last time we talked, the Natalie Holloway situation, I don't want to say resolved, but you finally got, like, is that closure for you when a case like that closes, or is it just like we all knew he did it,
Yeah.
but is there a satisfaction like in your head? Because you guys were there from day one. Like you and I talked about, that there was cinder blocks, there was evidence, all that sort of thing. And then it finally comes out, he does, and that guy just creeps. There's this certain people that just creep the shit out of me. The guy with the two girls down the hill. Every time you almost wish that you could block out that news because it just, again, I could. There's probably about a dozen of them that just give me that feeling in my stomach, and Vandersloot was one of them. So. I know you worked with the families. You guys did time.
Sure.
You did a lot of legwork on that. When you eventually went back, is there a piece to that, or it's just another day at the office?
When I went back to Aruba or when the case was satisfied?
Either one.
I think going to Aruba with Nancy Grace and Beth Holloway was a part of my career I have never experienced ever in
Really?
44 years, because usually going back means down the street. In this situation, we went back before it was completely solidified. Beth did not have complete closure. Beth probably fought harder and more with her heart, knowing the truth, but still holding out hope more than anybody I've ever seen. If you had asked her, is Natalie still alive? She knew she wasn't, but she might have been.
Yeah.
So that 1% she held on to. So I don't know if I said this before, but there's a part where the three of us go to the chapel that Beth went to and prayed. And we're sitting there, and this almost always happens to me at some point. I'm no longer sitting there as a crime scene investigator or an investigator. Nancy's no longer sitting there as a former prosecutor and media person. We're sitting there, the three of us, as mothers and mothers of daughters. And we don't even have to say anything. We're letting Beth do whatever she needs to do. And at one point, Beth turns to us and says, I know y'all are going to think I'm crazy, but I brought Natalie's passport with me just in case.
Heartbreak.
Yeah. But as a mama, you're like, okay, I get it. I hear
Yeah.
you. If she's here, let's take her home. You know, she's
Does
not
it's
here, but you know, that's her mama,
See,
you
you
know.
guys talked about that a little bit earlier as being able to turn it off. I don't think I'd be able to turn that off. There's just
Well,
again.
here's my question, because I don't know that I said I turn it off. I don't think I answered the question. Because turn off what? To me, you should be able to just absorb that so that you can explain to other people the importance of what you're doing. Because people said, why in the world are you going back to Aruba? Everybody knows who did it and everybody knows the end result. Here's the reason we went back. There was fixing to be a whole nother class of graduates that have not heard of Natalie Holloway.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's
I never
been
thought of
30
that.
years. So tell them, remind those parents, hey, if your child is going to another country, be sure you get the international package on your phone just for those 7 days. Otherwise, they can't call you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't check on them. Make sure you've got room on your credit card if you had to get there to look for them. And those are things people don't think about. They'll take that credit card to get the cruise for the child or the clothes and whatever they're going to need for the trip, and they're maxed out. They're not thinking about it. And Beth said, you want to know the crazy thing? She said, Cheryl, I didn't even know if my passport was up to date. And I had just sent my child to another country.
Yeah.
Here's the crazy thing. It was during COVID when we went. I had not even looked at my passport. My passport was expired. I had to do that deal where I flew to Texas and got it in one day so that I could even go on the trip. So again, to Beth's point, I had not even made sure my own passport was up to date, and both of my children travel internationally. So it's good information to remind people.
It's also, if you go to Texas, you can buy a whole bunch of handguns really quick and really easy. Now, speaking of handgun violence, I just wanted to go back when you guys.
It's some transition you've got right there.
That right segue.
When you guys see, I don't want to be pro-gun or anti-gun because I understand there's certain situations. Like you guys were just saying when you were walking the grounds in Georgia at the college. And this was one of my questions I had was advice for not so much a younger generation, but just anybody who's not in the true crime circle. Like, had she have had a gun or if a jogger has a gun, like, do you think that's a good defense or do you think there's better advice to be able to protect yourself?
Lisa?
Okay. Yeah. So I think that there are alternative methods and trainings that someone can acquire, and that I do think that firearms is one of them. But I do believe that you should either, depending upon the situation, obviously, it's the same thing as a police officer being given an order of shoot to kill. It's the same thing. There's different procedural steps that could be taken and or trainings to prevent you from getting to that point. Because there's a very big difference between an assault charge and or a weapons possession or murder or manslaughter case. There's a fine line of charges that, even though it is self-defense, obviously depending upon where you reside, I'm not getting political or any of that stuff, but I believe that as long as an individual is adequately trained with a specific skill set that they feel comfortable with, I don't think that firearms should be pushed on anyone because it is personal preference. It also comes down to the individual of whether or not they feel comfortable carrying a firearm. So yes, everyone has the right to bear arms. It is a constitutional thing, but it's everyone's own personal preference. And just because some people agree with it and others don't, it doesn't mean that everyone has to. So again, reiterating, I believe that firearms, me personally, I am all for them as a method of self-defense, but I do feel that if I were trained in other areas, I wouldn't necessarily reach for a firearm first.
Which I think is awesome. And again, I want to hear Cheryl's point in a second, because a lot of times when you see these people giving, speeches at colleges and all that sort of thing for safety, they're men. And you're like, you have no idea every time. I mean, if you dig deep enough, this shit happens every day. There's a college, there's, and then you have some asshole up there telling what women should be doing, where we actually should be listening to women on what women should be doing to keep themselves safe.
That's your round of applause. Yes. Well, here's my answer. I think we need to start with Lakeland. And the first point that I want to make is this was an ambush blitz attack. She was able to get to her phone, apparently, and start to dial 911, but was not successful in completing that. I don't know that she would have been successful engaging a weapon. I don't know. I believe she was attacked from the back first, possibly a rock to her head. I think she was incapacitated fairly quickly. But I want you to understand, she did everything right. She wasn't jogging when it was dark. She wasn't alone per se. There were people around. She was in great shape. She had a route picked out. She also, and I want to make this point, she had a roommate on sentry duty, honey. There's a lot of people that if you went jogging, your roommate might not even notice you didn't come back and certainly wouldn't have notified law enforcement so quickly.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of heroes in this thing, and her roommate's one of them. So again, you tell people, jog somewhere jog somewhere you're safe. The University of Georgia campus is safe. They have not had a murder in 30 years until now. She
Unbelievable.
was not out of bounds. She was not doing anything reckless. She wasn't drunk. It wasn't 3 in the morning. She wasn't cutting through, unsafe area. She was in broad daylight on her campus that has their own police department that are top-notch folks. And this person, not associated with the college, came out of his apartment, laid in wait for her, and attacked her and killed her. That's it. The only fault is with him, period.
So it's one of these awful cases where there was no avoiding it. She was going to die no matter what.
He had made that decision. And I think, again, if you imagine she's coming up, this trail, and it's beautiful. I mean, I can't even tell you how gorgeous. And there's a bank of apartments. I mean, there's probably seven It's units that can the see this dorms. area. Yeah, it's beautiful. So she probably never even thought she was in a place where she couldn't be seen by multiple people. It was just the timing and the location, and he drug her in the woods. I mean, that's what happened.
See, you guys have this experience. Like, again, it's fascinating walking the crime scene, DNA on shell casings and urine. And all this, these police works and these investigations and lie detections and all that, months and months, sometimes years of work in certain cases. Is there a frustration when this eventually gets kicked off into the legal system and they get dragged out? Like, I'm sure every time you guys woke up and you saw Alex Murdaugh name in the news, you're just like, will someone please have this guy in prison? But I understand that everyone's entitled to a defense, but let's use Jorn Vandersloot, for example, where everyone knew he did it and he was a scumbag and he was in jail and bag on the system costing money and all that sort of thing. As investigators, for you guys, do you wish that there was an expedited process just to kind of like the Wild West? You lock them up at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday and they hang them on Friday morning.
Well, Cheryl and I are dealing with that now with the Delphi case and everything that's going on. And all we want is justice for Abby and Libby and for Becky and the other family members. And after meeting with them and speaking, and Cheryl's worked very, very closely with the families throughout the years. That's one of those cases where it's just like, okay, we just need a resolve, but the resolve comes down to the criminal justice system. And now, because there's issues within the criminal justice system specifically tied to this case, we have to sit back as investigators, as well as advocates for the family members, as well as the victims, and say, what in God's name is going on? Like, get your shit together and do something about it. And then we just get these media alerts and like these Google alerts about the case and this and that. And we're just like, fucking is enough already. Like,
How
someone
is
just
this still
said,
happening?
exactly. Like what the hell is going on? And then I'm texting Charlotte or calling her. I'm like, do I have to get on a plane and like light a match under someone's ass? Like, I don't care. I'll go to jail over this. I don't give a shit. But like, fucking is enough is enough.
Your New York is showing.
Y'all, I'm sorry Lisa missed the wedding, but we can have it in 4 days when she gets out of jail.
Yeah.
Or
See
we can zoom
what
it.
happened? Oh, she went into a gas station in Georgia and she choked the person that was there until they told us where the best place for women to run at the campus is.
Yeah, like for fuck's sake. Like, honestly, these cases, like the families and the advocates and the investigators and the entire team that works this case, whether the feds have to get involved or the state, whoever it is, like we have to sit back and watch this shit go on through the. I'm sorry, I'm like ranting at this. I feel some type of way about all of this garbage that goes on. But at the same time, we're doing this because there's an individual that is
Yes.
innocent until proven guilty. So just as bad as that, we want the resolve and we want the justice. They want to prove their innocence allegedly to the same veracity. So you're literally dealing with the scales of justice going back and forth of where we can't rush this because then let's say this individual, or not necessarily saying Delphi, but anyone, they go ahead and they're found guilty. And then they can go ahead and file an appeal and say, well, you know what? This case was rushed. There's an issue with evidence. There's an issue with courtroom testimony,
My
but hand.
lawyer sucks, that sort of thing.
Yeah, any sort of crap could give them a reason to do this. So when we're dealing with especially high profile cases, even like we're dealing with this with Kohlberger in Idaho, you have to make sure everything is done by the book and to the T. So if an appeal does come down happen, everyone can be like, screw you, there's no grounds.
Now, Kohlberger, I don't want to waste too much time on this because I think we all know where that one's going.
Yeah.
If you see again, do you think that investigation? Because like Cheryl and I were laughing last time about Hoyerman, and that's what I'm telling you
Oh.
right now. People still that download that episode you did when you said he is the fucking laziest serial killer ever.
Yes.
Where
Yes.
you have the opposite of a Koberger, because if you look at the facts, there's a very slim probability there, but then. I'm really quick to I look at the guy. Somebody sent us something with a convicted murderer, convicted mass murderer, out of 1,050 or almost 1,100 cases. When they get up in front of the judge at the arraignment and say nothing, every single one was found guilty. Because if you were innocent of a crime like that, you wouldn't be able to keep your mouth shut. There's no
Yeah.
way.
Well, let's talk about Koberger. He is claiming he has an alibi,
He's been
right?
doing that for a while.
Where is it? Okay, but check this out. Who is going to say, hey, I've got an alibi. It's airtight. You're going to look really ridiculous at trial, but I'm going to sit in jail for 2 years and then I'm going to tell you the alibi. No way that's true.
Philippa.
Not possible. You're going to give up your freedom. You're going to lose your job. You are not going to see your family. You're not going to have sex with anybody that you choose. You are not going to be able to get married or have children or go to Chick-fil-A. I do not believe that you have an alibi. And when they first started to talk to you, you didn't say, "Hey, look, I was in Nebraska. Here's my airline ticket. Wasn't there. Not me. Not possible. Good try." That's what should have happened if he has an alibi. But him saying, "I got an alibi that's not an alibi." Well, I got a conviction that's a conviction.
Well, and you and I talked about that before when the Trump thing was going on in Georgia. Is all the Kohlbergers and the Delphi and the Hoyermans and the Trump and all that sort of shit that gets caught up in the legal system for months and months and years at a time are holding up actual cases. Like you were saying,
100%.
Cheryl, there's murderers out there walking around because you can't get your shit in front of a judge. Well, on the same hand, there's innocent people sitting in jail because they can't get their shit in front of a judge. Because, like, I mean, we can
I've
talk
got a
about
case. I've been waiting 2 years to get in front of a grand jury.
unbelievable. But
And
you
I
know,
can't
like,
do it because of Trump and then the allegations against Fonnie Willis. This whole thing has been turned into this circus. Yet this family, who had a daughter literally hacked into pieces, is waiting.
good God.
Not an excuse in the world that I would accept for that. There's no reason for it. Trump should wait. Fonnie's hearing should have waited. These people should have gone first, period.
Well, you know, we've talked again with Josh and Franz extensively about the Fonny thing. Okay, did she make a stupid decision? Yes. Stealing money, probably. But at the end of the day, the facts in the case had nothing to do. I mean, again, her personal life was a mess. And I know, Cheryl, you've stood by her like professionally throughout the whole thing. Again, she made some stupid decisions, but I'm
Yeah.
sure if you shine a light bright enough in any of our lives, you'll be able to find some stupid shit that we've done. Is that, again, is that case, do you think, going to have to start from the beginning? Or do you think that they're going to finally be able to just, you know, he's going to be in shit somewhere else, just kind of get this out of the way so you can actually
Listen,
get back to productivity?
and I want to be extremely clear. Bonnie Willis has been nothing but good to me. Everything that she told me she would do on these cold cases, she has done. I do not work for her. I'm on two task force assigned to her office. There are investigators in Atlanta. There are investigators in Fulton County. There's investigators in the Senate. There's investigators with the IRS. They should do their job. I have no idea. I'm not in the weeds with that at all. I do not like for my county to look ridiculous. I don't like to go to other states and people mention our DA in a negative way. She's got a lot of good work she can do. And she, I believe, if she's going to stay in that office, needs to get singularly focused. And if I am a friend of hers, that would be my advice to her. Anybody giving her any other advice about what she ought to do and how she needs to change her platform and she needs to start selling merchandise, I don't think that's a good look. That's my opinion as her
Bobblehead.
friend. This isn't a joke. She has a store. You can go buy merchandise. That is not what I would have suggested for her. I think her job is at a status that's not appropriate. That's my opinion. But again, we're not drinking buddies. We don't hang out on the weekends and, party like that. We are professional friends. But again, I think she's been given some advice that's not fabulous from people that do not have her best interest at heart. And that's the reason I'm going to tell you again, my podcast you mentioned is called Zone 7 for a reason. If you do not have my best interest at heart, if you're not a battle buddy, if you have not been battlefield tested, if you don't cheer for me, if you don't give me good advice, if you don't tell me the truth like Lisa will, and Lisa may say, "Don't say that, don't do this," she is looking out for me. If you're not that person, I'm not going to fool with you. I'm not.
See, and I don't want to blow smoke, but that's part of the reason why your podcast is so good. Because like we're all involved in the true crime universe, and there's you, there's Nancy, obviously, there's like Joseph Scott Morgan.
Oh.
Have you ever heard a more blunt, like I don't want to use the word disgusting, but he's like, and then we cut into the body and we
Oh,
tore,
yeah. Oh,
we used a
yeah.
rib spreader and started pulling bones
Dude,
out by hand. And his book,
listen,
if you read the back of
dude,
his book,
dude.
like.
Okay. Joe Scott Morgan,
yeah,
I love with my entire soul.
Second.
However, he can ruin a party faster than anybody.
I was left with the rotting body and stuff, but it's so calm and it's so like, you know what I mean? Like, if that was my story, and especially with a successful book, I'd be like, shouting from the rooftops, be like, you never believe the fucking shit that I went through. And where he just sits there and he's like, yes, and then the police pulled me out. I was covered with human. And I was like, he doesn't even seem bothered.
No, he's just telling you what happened. It was Wednesday, 9:43 a.m.
Yeah.
He's just talking. And, you know, I don't ever know what's going to come out of Lisa's mouth, ever.
Well, that's what we've been trying to put this together for a while because I keep hearing Lisa's
crazy. I'm telling you. And I also equally don't know what's going to come out of Joe Scott Morgan.
Yeah.
So I'm looking real forward to the Hamptons and our first
dinner.
Hamptons
is going
to
be great. You're going to get Joe and I together.
It's going to be fabulous. And that poor waitress, she'll be like, what'd she say? What did he say? And I'll be like, I'm going to leave you a really good tip, but that's what they said.
I'm more excited for the road trip there and back after picking you up at the airport. We're going to film in Louise the whole weekend because
yes, ma'am.
We've done Mexico, but we've never done the Hamptons.
Well, it's easy. You're probably going to walk into what I would imagine is a $65 million house. And Joseph Scott Morgan's going to make a waitress throw up in a wastebasket and stay up for 2 or 3 days.
We're going to have our own version of Clue.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's going to be fabulous.
If it's Joseph Scott Morgan with a bag of vomit in the library.
And excrement.
Just to roll back on all the shit that's going on now, Lisa, I'll ask you first. The YSL RICO trial, fascinating, but you know, there are 40 witnesses through 200. So it's one of these cases that's never going to end, but the Puff Daddy thing is obviously going to be way bigger. So do you think if you were able to get him on a lie detector test for 5 minutes, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, if you get three good questions in, do you think that you could get enough? Like, obviously your skill level is that good, but is there something like this where it's so vast, it's going to go back 30 to 40 years. It's never going to end. Like, do you think that you have the skill to be able to say, listen, give me him for 5 minutes and we'll put him in jail for the next 40 years?
So the issue is 5 minutes is the equivalent of running one polygraph chart. And when someone says I took a polygraph, they, as per the standards of the American Polygraph Association, they're supposed to be administered the exam at least 3 times. So you're talking at least, you need 15 minutes just to run the chart in order for an examiner to render an opinion. Not only that, you also have to run what's referred to as an acquaintance exam to test the ability of the individual prior to even giving them the test, that they are capable of telling the truth and they are capable of telling a lie, to make sure that they are reactive. And part of the reason for that is also to make sure that the individual is not chemically impaired, meaning that we've done the pretest interview and they've told me, no, I'm not on any medications, but the chart shows me on that exam that you're high as a kite, or maybe you took a beta blocker to affect your cardio reactions, or you popped a gabapentin or a Xanax, an Ambien, an Adderall, whatever it is, you've taken something, but you've already told me you're on no meds. I know that you took something to try and beat the test. So at that point, it turns from an interview to an interrogation and say, what the hell did you take? And you wouldn't have tried to take it if you knew you were going to pass. So out of all of these questions, which one are you going to fail and why? And that's when I just let myself go and I take myself off my proverbial leash.
Now, speaking of the proverbial leash, I don't want to say who is the worst person you've had on the other side of that machine, but is there a certain case that sticks out in your head where you're like, oh, this person's a fucking monster, but I have to finish this and do my job?
Oh, that's a good question.
Fun fact, never been asked that question before, so which is why I'm actually thinking before I speak, which Cheryl and you also know that I don't ever do. So
Cheryl and I could talk about New Yorkers and fried chicken while you think about it.
Fun fact, I've never had fried chicken.
What?
Never had fried chicken before.
I guess you got to get that for the road trip.
Yeah, I guess we're going to have to stop
somewhere. What?
Yeah, no, I've never had fried chicken. I think it's because every time I've looked at a piece of fried chicken, it's usually too over-fried and cooked. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a fan of like the crunchiness. Mm-hmm. But so that's what my issue is. But going back to your question. It's not the individual of who I've tested, it's the situation and case that I've worked on. I have tested victims of Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh.
And that I will tell you, you want to talk about examiner trauma? I tested multiple victims, and that I guess will tell you. I took like a 2 week vacation after that because I needed to go ahead and reset my own brain and my own mental health. Because it's not one of those things that I can go to a therapist and go, "Hey, so how was your day?" and be like, "Oh, well, guess what? This is what I
You're
did
not
for
going to
her."
believe this.
You're not going to believe. Listen, sit down, buckle up, get the popcorn, order Uber Eats because we ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, I need a 6-hour block twice a day for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Or pull like a Lewis Litt from Suits where he's got his shrink on speed dial and calls every 2 seconds. But that's probably the case that's probably that will always stick with me. And then always it's I know for some investigators, it's always your first case you ever worked. And the first polygraph I ever did, I got out of polygraph school and I was still in I had just graduated and my dad said to me, he goes, "Hey, guess what? Like, I think it was like a Tuesday night, 6 p.m. You have a client." And I go, "Our office closes at 5. He goes, "We're doing an after hours." And I go, "Shit."
Yeah.
I go, "What is it?" He gave me the case file and it was an individual being accused of shaken baby syndrome. And that one did me. That was the rough one that was the first one out the gate. And I looked at him and I go, "Are all of them like this?" And he goes, "Not all of them are going to be like this. You are going to see things and you are going to hear things." But he goes, "It's just now, how are you going to handle your emotions and what are you going to do to move forward and not let this get to you tomorrow when you have to test another examinee? Or what are you going to do to make sure that you don't have implicit bias for the next examinee that you have to test that's being accused of the same thing? Like, you have to make sure that I don't have that you don't have implicit bias in thinking that just because this person did it, everyone else that's being accused of this did it." So those are two things that I'll always that will always just be with me.
That, see, and again, I would have a hard time separating that because, like, there's just, again, you deal with this horrifying shit all the time, and then you have to go on show, you have to go on stupid podcasts and talk about it. You have to go on TV and talk about it. Like, to the point where it's like, you guys, Cheryl, do you ever get true crime fatigue? Like, if you get up in the morning and you see Nancy Grace has called, you're like, fuck, what happened? Who died now? And why do they want me to talk about it?
Well, you know, I'm still an active CSI, so I'm still on call. So when that phone rings, it's kind of like an adrenaline rush a little bit. So I'm one of those people when I stop having that, then it's probably going to be time to think about the next phase. But I also want to say that I'm all about work and life balance. And I believe, you know, as much hard work you put in, you should put in just as much fun. Well, yes, Lisa and I worked a case. We were on scene. It was a difficult case. She had a, you know, a sad memory, but we had a ball that weekend, honey.
Oh,
We
yeah.
sat by the lake and, you know, had a bottle or two of wine. We met with a brigadier general that's doing some cool, I don't even know if I can talk much
AI,
about it.
VR type of stuff. It was
Oh my
awesome.
gosh. I mean, we were behind the curtain, baby, on what the government is doing next level. And that was a blast. And then we, you know, had a couple of parties and
I
just
gave
we
your
had a
son a
ball.
polygraph test.
Gave my son a polygraph test, told him to lie. Said, "Don't worry about it. I'm telling you to lie." He's like, "I got this. No problem. Not an issue in the world." And of course he didn't pass it at all. And it was just a fun you know, time to be together and, you know, looking forward, like she said, to the road trip and, you
Oh, I
know,
wish
our
I could go to the Hamptons. I want to try this lie detector, truth or dare.
let me tell you, she's so good. And this was just a demonstration, but she is so good and she's so solid with the way she does the questions and her cadence. And it's almost like Simon Says. You remember Simon Says? You
Yeah.
know, Simon Says, put your, you know, hands on your shoulders. Simon Says, put your hands on your head. Put your hands on your shoulders. Up, I got you. You
Yeah.
know, it's kind of, it's almost like that, the way her cadence is. It's just strong and she explains everything. She explains every single thing that's going to happen, what every single wire is for, what every single connection is for. what all the, squiggly lines mean. So it's a wonderful thing, but I'm just telling you, I try to have, I would say 90% fun, and 10% is, maybe not so great to deal with, but the 90% make it easy to deal with it.
I
That's
can
all there
just
is
see
to
Lisa saying, "You see that squiggly line right there? That means you're fucking full of shit."
That is pretty, it's like
Well,
you were there.
can I tell you? So I did two presentations. I did one, I guess it was Friday night, or one was Friday night and one was Saturday night. And taking a New Yorker and dropping her into the Bible Belt and not really giving me fair warning in advance of like, hey, you might want to mind your manners and tone it down a little bit and not yell penis, penis, Venus, vagina, vagina, vagina
You're wearing a
before
t-shirt that says
blowjob
one
across.
tequila, two tequila, three tequila floor.
Yeah, or like don't yell blowjob across the room. Like just don't do it.
That's
Well,
awesome.
I Sh Cheryl appreciated it. I appreciated it. A good amount of the people appreciated it. Until Saturday night when I was about to do the same dog and pony show as I like to call it, and I was pulled aside and say, hey, you might not want to say the word Jesus Christ in the middle of your presentation, given the fact that we are in the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
So I said, blowjob's okay, but Jesus Christ isn't. Got it. No problem.
God damn it. You can't say that, but cocksucker.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can say
Yeah. You can
that all
say that all day.
day long. I know we're running a
They
little bit,
loved her.
but
They loved her.
there was one other thing I wanted to talk to you guys about. I was going to try to send over some individual cases, but a friend of our show, Frank Figluzzi on MSNBC, he has a book coming out 2 months about the FBI looking into, and this has been a problem for, the more you educate yourself on it, and again, he's a great writer, the correlation of long haul truckers and serial killers. Now, again, the book hasn't, it's not out yet, but if when you see cases like that, that seems to me like, like you were saying, you get a call and it's a challenge and all that. That seems to me like an impossible challenge, because a lot of these things, all you know is there, you've got a couple of dead bodies that have similarities that are found, up and down the highways, and it's a countrywide problem where you can end up, some of these, they're saying, 10 to 15 to 20 to 30 to 40, and you're thinking 40 victims and I have nothing to go on. So is this something that, I don't want to say that if it came across your desk, it would be a challenge, but is this something that, like, where would you start? That would be my curiosity.
Well, I was able to go to the FBI training about this very issue several years ago. And I will tell you, anytime you have a case, whether it's drug related or a trucker, anytime there's no connection between the killer and the victim, it's going to be more difficult because you can't put them anywhere together. You're just going to assume that they met at this traffic, this gas station or truck stop, so to speak. So many of the victims are also transient
Yeah.
that their family from Kansas has no idea they're in Florida, certainly has no idea she would be coming through Georgia for any reason.
I don't know they're missing.
Don't know they're missing, just think they're, runaways and, they talk to them every 6 months or whatever. So it's going to be inherently difficult, but I will tell you from all of my years, this is what I know. Criminals will gravitate toward jobs that make their crime easier. For example, if you want to molest little boys, Boy Scouts is a good place to start. A
Yeah.
little league coach is a good place to start. A
Church.
mall Santa Claus, not bad. They're already going to sit in your lap. So you watch these jobs. Who wants third shift at a morgue? A necrophiliac? So just pay attention. So if somebody wants to be a trucker where they're gone 6 weeks at a time and they go from Tennessee to California and back, and you start to notice, is there a pattern that every time he goes to, through Georgia, somebody goes missing. Every time he goes through Florida, somebody goes missing or wherever he's going.
We use
That,
Texas if you're trying to use a bad
well,
example.
that's true because again, anytime you've got long stretches of road where there ain't nobody else, you've got desert or you've got mountains or wherever you are, but they have chosen that job on purpose. They don't have a boss over their shoulder. They have points, but you know those weigh stations where they used to have to pull off? Those are freaking virtual now. So they don't even have to stop and talk to anybody. See, I think that makes people more dangerous. So now you're not even looking at me. You can't even tell me, oh, he had scratches all over his face. He was, bleeding from the head.
Or he even stopped him.
Or he had somebody in the passenger seat, correct? So that's my take on it, that if there's no connection between the killer and the victim, it's automatically going to be more difficult. If they've got a job where there's no oversight, that makes it almost beyond, it's beyond a challenge, but that's my take on it. Lisa?
I do agree with you that looking at the individuals, even their employment history, where did they work beforehand? Speaking to coworkers, point of termination, looking at their access of network of individuals pertaining to family history, friends, prior relationships. That's also where I would start. I would also take a look at the route maps for the consistency of are they taking the same road there and back through GPS records? Because maybe they want to go ahead and take a different route because there was a body possibly on the other route, and it could be too traumatizing for them to go back and relive what they did. Most serial killers will want to go back and take the same route because they do want to take the pride and joy of knowing they can revisit the crime scene. Going back to the situation with Lakin, like we wanted to go ahead and look at the crime scenes because let's say that the individual that was caught and was in custody. He was in custody, but let's say someone acted with him. You never know, and there's a high probability of a serial killer and or a killer goes back to the crime scene. Sometimes he is so fucked up, even goes to the funeral. That's why, as investigators, we have to take a look at these crime scenes, and we have to go ahead and see who's visiting them. And going back to the truck driver thing, taking a look at the GPS triangulation, did they even pull over on the side of the road for a little bit? Because you have the odometers that will go ahead and track how fast or how slow. So did the individual even decrease their rate of speed while in this one specific area? That's something that I would look into. But yeah, I mean, it's GPS triangulation is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, but the
Geofencing.
trucks have a black box. I mean, you would know if that truck stopped and the driver's door opened and then the passenger's door opened. You would know that. So again, the top three trucking companies, who came through here on that day, who was headed somewhere? You're not going to have that many at that exact time, at that exact location. So it is possible to track them down, but it's going to take some work. Sure.
One last
And there's
question.
copycats. We didn't talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
That's another reason to walk it. That's another reason to understand it. Because if somebody comes behind this person and wants to be like that person, you need to recognize how their crimes are different. So,
In a copycat, sorry, I wanted to tag on that for a bit. In a
sure.
copycat situation, that's obviously something you have to do hands on. Can you see that in a file or in paperwork, or is that something that you have to go look at firsthand?
I think I understand your question. Are you saying, can I tell it's a copycat based on a file? The short answer is possibly.
Yeah, no, I know it's a strange question. It's just, I'm curious if you, again, let's say the Natalie Holloway situation, for example, if that exact same crime happened in that exact same space under those exact same circumstances, would you be able to, deduce that it was either the same person had he have not been caught, or if it was different, if somebody different?
If you've got a killer that has not been caught and you start seeing, I would say, more than four significant similarities, you need to flag it.
Really?
And then you need to say, okay, what is different? Well, here's a situation that absolutely happened to us in Atlanta. We had a killer that was killing homeless people. One was killed inside a tent, one was killed under a bridge, and one was killed right on the sidewalk. Several years later, and I mean a good amount of time later, we had a homeless man shot in a tent, same caliber weapon. Another homeless man that was shot under a bridge. Well, I'm like, wait a minute. I've already played this movie.
Yeah.
That no way am I thinking this is just, coincidence, right? So I immediately called the detective that had the original case and I said, David, does this sound like your case? He said, 100%. So we're thinking we have a copycat. Come to find out, it's just a random younger person. And he just chose to shoot somebody while they were sleeping, shot another person when they were just sitting, shot another person while they were walking down the street. Exact same scenario, just happened to be the same caliber. Had no idea we had already had this exact same situation.
Which again is crazy because the odds of you seeing both those cases are one in a million. So again, the job you're up to, whether it's, trying to get DNA out of urine, long haul serial killer truckers and college, it seems like, again, I love the passion that you guys have for it because I love, the fact that there's cases out there getting solved where, without social media and all that, it wouldn't happen. But without people like you guys, things would be way worse. But
Listen, if
I
you don't have the passion, you should not be doing it.
don't
I will straight up tell you. You're talking about somebody's mama or child or husband or grandmother. You need to work that thing like that's your person. And again, when it comes time for me to say, well, you know what? I don't feel that way anymore, or I'm bored, I need to be at home. I don't need to be the one out there.
No, write a book and go on MSNBC. They pay well, apparently.
I know for me, what it's going to be is I know I need to hang up or turn the equipment off and put it in a box in the closet is going to be when I stop feeling emotionally charged towards my cases, where when I'm no longer tied to the case. And I mean, I've been doing this now, PI work since I started when I'm 16 working as a file assistant. So I've been around the block way too long, but I've been licensed on my own since I'm at least 22, 23. So I'm going on like 13, 14 years now. And I've seen everything from rapes, molestations, homicide, burning kids with cigarettes, putting PCP in baby bottles, to kids being kicked out of college for Title IX sexual offenses and stuff like that. And then I deal with like the Maury Povich cheating husband and wife type of thing. But I know that once I stop being emotionally involved in my cases, or wanting, or feel, or I like to call it some type of way feeling. When I lose that feeling, I'm done.
One thing, sorry, one last question before we go, because we had a bit of a blast with this last week. If you guys weren't doing what you're doing now, what would you be doing? Like, no
I'd
cops,
be
no
sipping
lie
margaritas on
detectors.
the beach.
I'd be an alcoholic.
Yeah, no. So the fun fact that people don't know about me is I'm actually a former middle school and elementary school teacher for special ed and kids with autism. So yeah, so at some point, New York State gave me a license to teach for about 5.5 years, and that's why I did polygraphs full time. I went to polygraph school because when I graduated from undergrad, the teaching market, there were just no jobs available, and so I was already working with the family business, and then I went to polygraph school. I did that for about 5 or 6 years, and I was burnt out. And I was like, I've got two master's degrees and two bachelor's in education, and I'm sitting on student loans. I'm like, let me go into the classroom and really make sure that I do not want to have children of my own someday. And at that point, I realized that after being in the classroom, I was like, I could either be in a classroom with other people's children and then send them home at the end of the day, but still deal with homework, report cards, parents, BS behaviors. Or, and then have to be on school vacation schedule, or I could work for myself with unlimited vacation, unlimited sick time. I could wake up on a Monday morning and go, I don't want to go to work. So I opted to switch careers, and it's the best thing that I ever did because right after, I would say 2 years after I got out of the classroom, that's when Mac and I met at CrimeCon during COVID. And since meeting Mac, I mean, the opportunities that she's, the platform that she's given me and the opportunity she's given to me. I mean, we're just not colleagues. Mac's one of my people. Like, this is Mac and I are more than Zone 7, where we just call each other at the end of the day. And I'm like, I don't need you to talk. I just need you to sit and listen. And if I don't even say anything, I just need to know you're on the other end of the phone because she's one of my people. Like, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to do anything.
drinking wine quietly over the phone. That is a special relationship.
Oh, yeah. And half the time, I don't even say, hi, how are you at the beginning of the conversation. The first question usually is, am I on speakerphone? And I learned how to do that. Because I've been caught off guard too many times by listening to Walt in the background laughing, and that's how I know I'm not on. I know it's not just her and I.
Yes.
Cheryl, if you weren't a cop, what would you be doing?
Let me tell you something. I have wanted to be an investigator since I was 4 years old. I can't imagine not doing it. I can't imagine not being on the dance floor when major things happen. I mean, I hear sirens and I want to go get in the middle of it.
4 years
However,
old. What was that, 25 years ago?
exactly right. Thank you, sugar. But I just heard somebody say unlimited vacation, so I might be a polygrapher if I wasn't doing this. Sweetheart, we can go back to Mexico anytime you want.
For more Cheryl McCollum, make sure you download her podcast, Zone 7. Check her out on Twitter at 149 Zone 7. Google her, turn on your TV, wherever trouble is afoot, and she'll be there. And for a little extra helping of Lisa Rybakov, check her out on Twitter at Lisa Rybakov, visit IIGPI.com. Or just lie 3 times in a row in a mirror and she'll show up and tell you that she's from New York and give you a good ass whooping. I can't thank you guys both. That was absolutely, isn't it amazing? The hour goes by so quick.
So
I
fast,
know.
so fast.
First,
Oh,
we
I've
find
been
out
looking forward to this all day. I
you can
can't
get
thank you
DNA
enough.
out of pee and all
Yeah.
truck drivers and small Santa Clauses are creeps.
You're welcome.
All right, have a good.
The more